It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Welcome, everybody, to Behind the Braves, the official podcast of the Atlanta Braves. I'm Ricky Mass from MLB.com here in the Alumni Lounge, the Braves Alumni Lounge at SunTrust Park, alongside my partner, World Series champ. All right, let me see. I always try to make sure I get all these. Runner-up Rookie of the Year, World Series champ. That's a pretty good list right there. I'll just go with that. And current director of Braves Alumni Relations, Greg McMichael. How are you, buddy?
Great. Good to see you, Ricky.
You too. You too. It's getting a little chilly outside. We both had to wear jackets down here today. I know.
Yeah, we need to send this weather out to California. The fires out there, if they take some of this rain, what, it rained 3 inches yesterday?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my gosh. I'll take some of that dryness, and maybe they can have some of this rain.
It would be a good trade.
Yeah. I'm sure they would take it.
Definitely would be. Well, this week's guest on Behind the Braves is pretty interesting. This has been one I've been anxious for folks to hear. Rico Cardi, former Braves outfielder, part of some of those classic Braves teams from the 60s and 70s. And I'll just start from my perspective. He was a guy who I had heard his name, grew up. I've always been a Braves fan and a baseball fan, so he's just a name I had heard. But I honestly couldn't have told you much of anything about him other than he was a guy who played for the Braves back in the day, and that's really all I could have told you. So once we found out that we were going to have him on Behind the Braves, I started doing some research and looking up his numbers and trying to read everything I could about his career, and I thought, my goodness, this guy could freaking hit back in the day. I mean, he was a stud in his day when he was healthy. He battled a lot of injuries and tuberculosis, as you'll hear him talk about today. But he was a heck of a ball player. And then the other thing that I kept coming across was he was clearly in his career was an outspoken fella too, and was not afraid to tell folks how he felt. You'll probably hear that today too, that he's whatever's on his mind, that's he's going to tell you. But just a fascinating guy. I mean, here's a guy who came to the United States, didn't speak English, came here in the days of segregation, which he talks about that a little bit, which is it's tragic and it's fascinating, and it's important to hear guys like him talk about those days. Talking about hitting between Hank Aaron and Orlando Cepeda, and his charitable work with his foundation, the Rico Cardi Foundation in the Dominican Republic, and the tragic death of his oldest son, Rico Jr. He talks about that. We weren't going to ask him about that, but he brought it up, and it was I found myself sitting here just listening. Not even, you know, when you're interviewing somebody, you're kind of supposed to be thinking about, okay, where am I going to take this next? What am I going to ask next? With him, I was just sitting here just listening. That's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to hear what he had to say. And fortunately, we didn't have to ask him much. He pretty much just say a couple words, and he just went with it. So, Greg, talk about he's somebody who hasn't been around here really at all in Atlanta the last couple decades. How did this relationship between you and him come about? And you brought him here to Atlanta. He led the chop. I mean, how did that happen?
Yeah, it was great getting to know Rico a little bit. We spent probably 2 or 3 days together just doing – I had all of his family out to the game. He came in for Alumni Sunday. He actually didn't do the stuff out in the plaza with us, but he was here. Like you said, he led the chop. And we were able to get him on the podcast, which you're going to hear in a little bit. And it was great for me to connect with such a great ball player from our history. I have a picture in my office that somebody put together for me. It has the 1966 team. So that was the year I was born. That was the team that came to Atlanta. And so I was familiar with Felipe Alou. He was managing when I was playing. I was familiar with Sandy Alomar. He was a coach in winter ball. I played with his son, Sandy Alomar Jr., when I was with the Indians. And I saw, obviously, Phil Niekro's on that list, and Rico Cardi's on that list, Hank Aaron, Joe Torre. So there's a ton of great players that came here in the 60s that were playing for us. But Rico is one that, you know, he lives in the Dominican. So, you know, sometimes you don't think you can just pick up the phone and get a hold of somebody. And so I always ask some of our alumni from the Dominican. I talked to Rafael Furcal, and I talked to Francisco Cabrera, because Francisco comes back for alumni weekend every year. Hey, have you seen Rico? I'd love to connect with him. Do you have any contact with him? Do you know where he lives? And you know, those guys didn't. So for me, I think there was an article that was written from a reporter here in the States that actually went to the Dominican and did a really nice article on Rico, talking about his foundation, talking about his career, talking about where he is today. So I was able to connect with the reporter through our foundation and end up calling Rico and talking with him. And next thing you know, unfortunately, he actually came to town because his son had passed away. And that's when we had a chance to connect during those circumstances, which weren't the best. But it still allowed me some time to spend with him, and hopefully we'll continue that relationship. Again, like you, I was fascinated by just hearing the stories, getting to see and talk with a man who walked through some really difficult times, health issues, a difficult time in American history where we had a lot of civil rights issues going on, and getting his perspective on it. I really enjoyed that. Rico, he can tell some stories. Like you, I found myself being wrapped up in his stories and not thinking about what I really wanted to ask him. But but anyway, it was a good time, and hopefully we'll continue to have Rico. I know that I did book him for Fantasy Camp.
Oh, awesome.
That's coming up in Orlando here in January. And he's going to be one of our special guests, along with Andrew Jones and Leo Mazzoni. And then we have 12 other alumni that are going to be coaching. So I did was able to book him for that, and he was excited to come be a part of that as well.
Yeah, and it's I'm just excited that he's kind of back in the – we're getting him back mm-hmm. in the fold here in Atlanta. And you could tell from talking with him, I think he wants to be involved with
Definitely.
It. And he's again, it's for us, it's people like me and people like you who maybe didn't know much about him. The fact that he's here, came here, and that we're getting to hear his story here, we're learning who he is. And I think that I think a lot of other Braves fans in Braves country will enjoy hearing from him and getting to know him today, and we'll hopefully look forward to seeing him, you know, come around a little bit more.
Well, my hope is that our audience continues to grow, because I would imagine – now, my dad, I'll take a shout-out to my dad, just turned 80 in October, and he listens to us.
Okay.
I'm not sure how many other 80-year-olds listen to the podcast. I hope that continues to grow. But that group, you know, 60, 70, 80 years old, they're the ones that remember watching Rico. And I wish we had the footage available, and that's one thing – you know, I've continued to talk to our ownership about – not ownership, but our executive team about how do we get some of our old footage from Turner and get it for these guys. See, there's a lot of alumni that have never seen themselves play on TV. And I know we have that footage at somewhere, and I would love to be able to just watch. You know, we're sitting here in the alumni lounge, and we've got two huge big-screen TVs. It'd be really cool to have some of that playing – And to ask someone like Rico, now what was going through your mind right here? And I see you facing Sandy Koufax, Don Drysdale. You know, what were you thinking about doing? You know, and that to me would just be unbelievable.
I agree. It would be. And your dad's 80. Rico's 79.
79, that's right.
And by the way, looks healthy as well. He easily – I think he talks about it in here.
Yeah.
He could pass for a lot
as he points to his forearm and says – I've never lifted a weight, can't you tell?
He absolutely did that. He definitely did. And as you're also going to hear, his speaking voice is – it was funny, before he came in here, you told me, like, he's got a really unique voice. And I was like, okay, I didn't really know what that meant. And then when he came in, and I'm not going to try to impersonate him, but I was kind of blown away. I was like, this guy – if he doesn't already have a voice in like a job as a voiceover guy,
yeah,
somewhere,
the golden voice.
He's got some pipes on him, man. So Well, we really, really enjoy getting to know Rico Cardi, and I think you guys will too. And without further ado, here he is.
Well, Rico, welcome to the Alumni Lounge here at SunTrust Park and Behind the Braves. That's the name of our podcast, and we appreciate you being here today. You know, yesterday we got to spend a little time together with your family. We had Los Bravos and Alumni Sunday, so we got you out there, introduced you to the fans again. You have a lot of fans here in Atlanta, and you're able to do the chop. So how was that for you?
That was great. It's great coming back to Atlanta. I think I haven't been here since 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I was looking forward to the Braves, you know, because it was going to bring me back to those years that I wasn't here. Because it's surprising, I was one of the most popular ball player with the fans. Not with the ball players. I had problem with seven ball players.
Seven?
Yeah, seven of them. Because, right. You know, I'm the type of fellow, I couldn't take too many pushes. But when the time goes by, you start learning. Is the truth from the American people. It's one thing I learned from you all. You will step on somebody and you say, forgive, I'm sorry. I used to say to myself, why? I was the one that stepped on him and he said, he's sorry. And throughout the times, I start learning that. I said, these is humble people. It's not the way we, the Latin players, you know, we come to a different country. It's really tough because in our country, we all live together. And if you're a ball player, you can do so many things and people will always put you way up. We come from different families, very poor families. And the majority of the ball players in the Dominican Republic really come from really down. Okay? And when they get a few dollars, they think they got God in their hands. With my father and my mother was a midwife, my father was a boss under the tracks of the sugarcane company. And I tell you one thing, I never passed hunger one day. And that is the truth. I learned from them to don't crave at the dollars, at the money. When they signed me, the Milwaukee Braves signed me, it was John Mullen and Ted McGraw. St. Louis gave me a blank contract in 1959 that I could put any amount of money that I want in that contract. The owner of the teams in the Dominican Republic, Antun, said, no, wait a minute. He belongs to the Strangers in San Pedro, and we want him to sign with the Milwaukee Braves because John Mullen and him was very good friend. The scout that gave me the contract in blank said he can play for the Strangers in San Pedro and plays for St. Louis Cardinals. He told them no. And I didn't know anything about money because I wasn't craving at the money. I wanted to play baseball. Okay? I accept $2,000 at that time. That's what they give me.
Wow.
The Milwaukee Braves. And I give it to my mother. But I'm just showing you what we go through when we come from the United States, from the Dominican Republic, Latin players, to the United States. The color bearer. I could have never understand that. We don't live like that in our country. Wherever you go, it's the truth. It's prejudice everywhere, little or big. But in our country, it's the money, your status, the way your family is positioned. You can be black at your shoes, and if your father and your mother, your family is in good status, you can do anything you want in the Latin countries. And when we come here to the United States, that we can sit down in a restaurant to eat, get on a bus, and you got to go in the back part of the bus. You go to a restroom, and you cannot. It's white, black. I said, what is this? Were you going to take your bowels? You know what you said it in English? And you cannot go into where you want to go and do your, you know.
Go to the restroom.
Yeah, yeah. Restroom, you know.
It's crazy.
It was crazy, really. Yeah.
Well, we just had 25 years from the anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination. 50. Yeah. 50 years. And we were interviewing some of the players that were here during that time. Joe Torre came back, was here, and obviously Hank.
I played with Joe Torre, Hank Aaron.
Right.
Clete Bowyer, Bobby Stramonte, Mac Jones, Tony Cunningham. Ron Reed, Pat Jarvis. Now, that was about there. Pat Jarvis and Tony Cloninger. When they're pitching, you got pitchers up there. Phil Negro. Phil Negro was the type of pitcher. He was a knuckleball pitcher. He was very good. When he is his day, you're not going to hit him that easy. And that one time, I say that the Braves in those days, with Hank Aaron, Felipe, and Felipe Millan, Rico Carty, and Orlando Cepeda, then goes down Clete Bowyer. It was the best hitting ball club in baseball.
Yeah, you guys had some great.
I'll tell you one thing, and this is the truth. We was playing against the Giants here one night, and it was raining, and the Giants was beating us 12-1 in the bottom of the eighth inning, and it's raining. We get back in the field, it rained again. We end up beating the Giants 14-13.
Wow.
That's how good our ball club was.
That was a good game.
Our defense was weak. We had Sonny Jackson in the shortstop. And he always said, Rick, what'd you say? He didn't feel a ball. But Paul Richard liked him. He bought him from Houston, too. And that's happened a lot. And Paul Richards was one of the smartest general manager in baseball. And that is the truth. Like I'll say, look, to me, because I hit behind a Hank Aaron, to me, Rico Carty, that's the best hitter I ever seen in baseball. In 1966, and the ending of May, Hank Aaron was hitting 138 or 158, the ending of May, I look at Hank and said, Hank, what are you doing? He says, man, what you telling me? I say, are you going for his home runs? You know, and they're not going to give you any good pitches. So why don't you try to spread the ball around and then go for your home run? We came in the clubhouse that night and we sitting together because we was real good friends. And he said to me, he said, Rico, you look at me from tomorrow on. I'm going to split the ball around. And he just started doing that. Bam, bam, to all opposite field, all fields. When he was hitting about 290, 300, he said, Rico, now I'm going for the long ball. I'm going for the money drive. And that year he ended up hitting 44 home runs, hitting about 320, 310, something like that. And driving 121 runs. Ain't no hitters can do that.
That's crazy.
You know?
Hey, well, let's tell our fans, just remind our fans just what kind of ball player you were. I want to read you some things, some of your awards, records that you've done over the years, and then and maybe comment on with us, just comment what's the most impressive to you and what you take the most pride in. So I just want to share this with everybody just as a reminder what kind of player Rico was. But he was an all-star. You're runner-up rookie of the year. 1964, you finished second to Roberto Clemente for the batting title. There were 8 seasons where you batted over 300. You're tied for first with Ralph Garr for the all-time batting average of 317 with Atlanta and Milwaukee combined.
And then your sixth overall with our franchise, including Boston. There were a bunch of guys mm-hmm. back turn of the century that were that hit, but you were sixth overall. That's including Boston. Then you set a record for 31 consecutive games with a hit until 2011, where Dan Ugla ended up with 33, I think.
I believe it was 33.
33. And then today you still have the record for the highest batting average for a season, that's 366. So those are pretty impressive records that you have. But out of all those, what means the most to you with those records?
Well, I'll tell you, 366 was great. In what I did that year, that Hank Aaron, Eddie Mathew, and all of them get mad with me because Orlando Cepeda was the fifth hitter. But at the time, I wasn't thinking that I was doing harm to nobody. I was doing a favor. And I told Skip, I said, look, put Orlando fourth, put me fifth, sixth, seventh. I'm going to hit wherever you put me. I said, okay, put me fifth. So they keep telling Rico, hey, you never do anything like that in the big leagues. Hank Aaron, Carlin told me the same thing. Eddie Mathew, all of them. Rico, hey, you never done anything like that in the big leagues. I said, well, I'm going to do it because if you put me eighth, I'm going to hit. Wherever you put me, I'm going to hit. That's the confidence that I had in myself as a hitter. Hank Aaron got mad, and he was right. After I understand, you know, by the time was going by, I say, hey, I didn't do it because I wanted to harm Hank Aaron. I did it to help Orlando Cepeda. And after that, Orlando started hitting. And then he was happy because then you got Orlando fourth and me fifth. You got a picture of Hank Aaron. But the funny thing in that year, when we got to San Diego, Orlando was already hitting almost 300. He had almost 20-something home runs. Okay, he had about 80 runs by the end. I said to Orlando, okay, you're on your way now. Give me my fourth spot back. You know what he told me? He told me no.
Yeah.
I said, what you mean no? You can't be that ungrateful. I have helped you, okay, and that's my spot. I went to the manager, Roman Harris. You know what Roman told me? I told you. So don't you come in here talking that stuff to me. I said, wait a minute. I'm the fourth hitter, not Orlando. And if you don't put me fourth hitter, I'm going to get out of the lineup. He said, well, if you do that, you'll never be in the lineup anymore because I'm the manager. I say, okay, Orlando, we're in San Diego. Okay. From San Diego, we went to three different cities. And every city we got to, I tell him, Orlando, tell him, man, you put me forward. He says, no. He said, when we get to Houston, I will give you your fourth spot. We got to Houston. I'm sitting down. I'm dressed. I look up. Fourth and fifth, the manager didn't put no name up there. I said, okay. I went up. I put my name forward and put Orlando fifth. Luman came out and said, who did that? I said, Mr. Luman, with all respect, I did it because I'm the fourth hitter. He said, no. I'm the manager. And we all told you that you should never do that. And Orlando don't want to give you back the fourth spot. You got to wait now until we get to Atlanta. I said, Orlando, you know why I don't fish you right now before these people? Because you are my best friend. Hmm. Or one of my best friends. But you, hey, I don't like you anymore. He said, what you mean? And he hugged me, you know, and so forth. And said, hey, be quiet, man. You're still hitting over 400. So what you fighting about? I said, because I helped you, and now you should be nice enough to say, Rico, here's your fourth spot. Hmm. So everybody was laughing at me, and Hank told me, he said, you see what I told you? There it is. So we get to Atlanta. Okay, we came into Atlanta. I think that Mr. Luman is going to put me fourth again. He didn't. He leave fourth and fifth out. He was just spiting me to show me You cannot be that nice a guy. Mm. It was about wrong about 7:20. I said to myself, if he don't put me fourth spot, I'm not going to play. Exactly about it was 5 minutes before the game. I came off the field and come on in. Exactly the time, it was 2 minutes before the game start. There I was in the fourth spot. He told me, he tapped me on my shoulder. He said, I make a bet you'll never do that again. I said, I'll never do that to nobody again.
That's great.
And that was one of those years that I think I had one bad month. I can't remember. It was June or July. I hit about 250. But it's there in the record. But you know something? The left-hand pitcher is the one that gave me trouble. Mm. And I didn't know because I was hitting so high all the time. I never think that the left-hand pitcher was giving me any trouble. So one day we was in L.A., and every time the eighth and ninth inning is coming up, Walter Erson would always bring a left-hand pitcher to pitch to me. I pop it up or hit into a double play. Mm. So that day, they was beating us 3-2. And, you know, I always a good hitter with men's on base. And that's why they about my third year, Presta Aston and Wasta Aston and all those managers say, pitch to Hank, don't pitch to Rico. Because in two strikes, I was dangerous. Mm. Nobody get me out in two strikes. But the left-hand pitchers, I was always take the third strike. And I didn't know why. Until one day, Walter said, what you talking about? You don't hit left-handed. I said, what you talking about? I don't hit left-handed. And Paul Richard called me upstairs. Come on up. I want to talk to you. I said, now what have I done? He said, come on, sit down. He says, look at your status. He's hitting 120 against left-handers, and he'd have more 500 against right-handers. I said to him, I don't know why. Hmm. He said, why don't you go to I have a bat? I say, I hit with a 36-38.
Goodness gracious. Mm.
But
that's a telephone pole.
Yeah, but here's Richie Allen. He hit with a bat, with his bat. His weight bat is 45-50 ounce bat. 44, 45, 50 ounce bat. I don't know how the hell he could have swing with that bat.
I don't either.
So one day we was here playing against Phillies, okay? And we was real good friends. And here he is, you know, hitting bat in practice. I pick up his log. I said, oh, man, this feel good. He said, you want it? I said, yeah. I'm going to hit with it today. Young, strong, you know. First time up, I got into the home plate, and when I tried to pull that trigger, I couldn't. I said, what in the world is this? Out here, I pick it up, you know, I swung it, good. But when that pitch came to me, I couldn't pull the trigger. I froze. I say, so I told the ump, I say, ump, I can't hit with this bat. He said, you're going to have to hit with it.
Oh, he wouldn't give you timeout?
No, he wouldn't. I took all three pitches right down the middle of the plate. I couldn't swing that bad. I went in the dugout and I said to Orlando, I said, Orlando, how in the world you can swing that bad? I said, hey, my bat is 36-38, and I couldn't pull the trigger with that one. He says, man, I swing it, and Richie Allen swing it, and Richie Allen swing it so easy. Wristed, you know, he just have that quick wrist with that bat.
That's crazy.
You mentioned earlier that you had a strong connection with the fans, either Cardi's Corner, the fan club, and the outfield, left field. In 1970, you were voted into the All-Star Game as a write-in candidate, a starting outfielder as a write-in candidate, which is incredible. I mean, did you, from the time you moved to Atlanta, did you always have that strong connection with the fan base here, or did it take time?
When I came from Milwaukee to Atlanta, in 1964, because they always call me Smiley. I always had a smile on my face. The American people like that. They don't like a hot dog. And I would strike out, and I would smile. I made an error, and I would smile. They give me the name Smiley. Then I give myself the name Big Boy.
Okay.
And they would come out in the stand from left to right, Rico for president. I mean, it was something that unbelievable. In Milwaukee, Rico for president. It would be the whole week that we played there, Rico for president. And the press will come up to me and say, Rico, hey, how do you like that? I say, I love it, but I cannot be president of the United States. I'm Dominican.
Right.
I cannot be. So it'll come out in the paper, Rico says he cannot be president of the United States. Then it come out, Rico for governor. So that's if good. It was today, they would explore that so much. But I think it's somewhere in there where you put up all those records.
Yeah.
It should be there. Mm. Then we came to Atlanta in 1966. And somehow my stamina with the fans came out. And they stood out in left field. Rico, Rico, you know, then they called me Smiley. But the funny thing is that when I was growing up, I didn't have nobody to give me a baseball. So when I get those baseball in left field, I used to throw up to the stand. Some of the ball players used to say, what he does, that's what he wants the fans them to love him. And that wasn't true. I was doing the case from my heart. But you know something? The commissioner of baseball, they wrote the commissioner. And the commissioner was fined me $5 for each ball I throws in the stand. Wow. And you know what I was gaining? $8,000 a year. And in 1964, I hit 330. 1965, I hit 310. I dislocated my low part of my back. I was out most of the time. 1966, I hit 326. Mario Lu Felipe, Lu Enrico Cardi, trio. Dominican players, one behind the other. In 1967, I dislocate my shoulder, run hand. I don't know, when things going to happen, that is going to happen. Who sent me to steal base? I was no great runner, but he didn't, the pitcher didn't goes into his, and I took off. He didn't even look at me. Ron Hunt got the ball upstairs and his knee into my shoulder. He dislocated my shoulder. And I couldn't drive the ball towards the opposite field. I played throughout that year, and I know I should have get out of the lineup, but that was me. I keep pushing. I end up that year, I think, hitting 235 or 250, something like that, 255. Then I came down with tuberculosis in 1968. That was my hard blow. In the youth of my career, I came down with tuberculosis. But I said one thing to myself. I say, everybody says, why me? I didn't say that. I said to the Almighty God, I say, Lord, have mercy upon me and give me back my complete health. I don't want to blame nobody for my illness. Because like I said, you're born, and in that white piece of paper is what you're going to do in life. Whatever you're going to do, it's right there written. The day that you're going to die, ain't nobody going to save you. Because it's already written down. And when I came back in 1969, I dislocated my shoulder 7 times. I was always in pain. And I end up hitting that year 342. And we clinched the Eastern Division seat ship by meeting a player. I had to because I wasn't going to throw nobody. It was at shoot top. Tommy Hands with the base loaded. If that ball dropped in, we would lose the game. But I made up my mind I had to cut that ball. It was two outs playing against Cincinnati. If that ball dropped in, they was going to tie up with us. So when he hit that ball, I made up my mind I had to cut that ball. And I cut it on my shoe step. We won. And I came in. Bill Lucas said to me, Rico, he was part of the staff. He said, Rico, why you did that? I said, Bill, if that ball drop in, we're going to lose the ball game. Who was I going to throw? Because I couldn't throw. So I had to make the play. He says, man, you something else, you know. And this is, then I came back in 1970. And that was my great year when I hit 366, 25 home runs, 101 run batted in. But you see, I was hitting behind a man like Hank Aaron. He don't live no man's on base. And what he leave, that's what I pick up. See what I mean?
That's right.
And I'll tell you one thing, and this is the truth. Hank Aaron, I never seen Ted Williams played. I never seen Stan Musial, maybe at the end of his career. But I heard about Ted Williams, how great he was. Ty Cobb, you name them. But to me, Hank Aaron would do whatever he wanted to do on the field as a hitter. And he was the type of person, he never talked. He'd go out, play his game, and go on home. The year of 1963 that I came up to the big leagues, Warren Spahn, Lou Burdett, Del Crandall, Frank Torre, this was the superstar, Johnny Logan, and so forth. They used to come out and the fans were all over them. I said, hey, that's great. 2 years later, this is the word that Lou says. He said, gee. It turned around. Nobody's asking me for my autograph. And I said to myself, so I'm going to take a while and give these fans my autograph. And I used to do it every day we play here. I used to take out 2 hours and 3 hours. Sometime my family would come out and say, let's go. I say, hey, you go home. I'll stay here and sign. And that's why I think the fans adore me, because sure. I was the honest ball player to take out time and give them the autograph or throw a baseball to the stand. I think in one, I'm going to sue the commissioner for taking up my money.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, you're still doing that today, because I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about your foundation, because you're still giving back, just like that heart that you had to be able to give kids baseballs back when you played, or sign autographs for the fans. You're still giving back today. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, tell us the name of your foundation and what you're doing down in Dominican.
It's Rico Carty Foundation. Sometime I go out to give speech to the young kids and tell them things that really they have to hear. For instance, steroid and all that stuff. They don't have to use that to play baseball. I never lift weights in my life. And you can look at me, look at my hands. If I ever lift weights, I wouldn't like look like that. If I used steroids, greeny, I wouldn't look like where I look today. And you know, I'm 79 years old, and that lady that bring me to the ballpark, I told her, say, I'm 70. She said, what?
Yeah, you don't look it.
I said, hey, no. Oh, you look like you was 50 or 55. I say, no, I'm 79 years old. He said, God bless you. It's the way you take life, too. See? You can do everything in life, but you have to know how to do it. Things goes by so far sometime that you look at these kids of today and say, what are they doing like a hitter? I like Freeman as a hitter. He wait and react. That's the way you hit. But the majority of the hitters, they start swinging before the ball get there. So if the ball is around the strike zone, they will hit it. Once it's to a slider, you can see that bat is way out there. There's not even seeing the ball. And I'll tell you, Trout from...
From the Angels.
Angels. He is a good hitter. Mm-hmm. He wait. Okay? Albert Pujol, he's a great hitter, but sometimes he looks... And it's the truth, he looked bad in the home plate. You know, after you got 10 years, 8, you have to know the strike zone. You shouldn't look like that. Sammy Sosa was the same way. But Albert Pujol is a lot better hitter than all of them of his experience. And that's why I criticize him and say he shouldn't look like that when, you know, in two strikes or nothing. Because he already known the strike zone, and that's your strike zone right there. What you going to go out there looking for? You know? But that's part of baseball. But the young players of today, I'll tell you one thing about Rico Carty. I couldn't swing at the first pitch. And the pitchers knows it. And they come right down the middle of the plate. The manager, Orlando Cepeda, Hanky, and everybody will holler to me, Rico, swing at that pitch because you're not going to get anything else. I couldn't. When I'm in the hole, I'm a better hitter. In 2-0, I couldn't swing at a pitch. I got to get a strike to be a hitter. 3-0, I couldn't. Every hitter want to be on top of the pitcher. Every hitter, I could not. And that's why you see most of my fellow men around me say, Rico, you are the best right-hand hitter I've ever seen. Because nobody on earth in 2-0 would wait for strikes. And they knows it. And they'll come right down the middle of the plate. But I couldn't swing. If I swing, I'm an out. Well, after I got that strike, now I'm a hitter. See? But the majority of the great hitters, they like to get on top of the pitcher 2-0, 3-0. That's when they hit the long ball. I couldn't. And now, when I get to strike, I don't care if you're Gibson, Marichal, Drysdale, Koufax, Tom Seaver, Nolan Ryan, you know, Jim Palmer, every one of them, I'll give them that strike. And I go from there on. And if this your day, I'm going to let you get me in two strike. Because when I get two strike, you're in trouble, not me. Today, the majority of the hitters, when they get two strike, they're in trouble. And I was the other way around. When I get two strike, that's when I was dangerous.
Who do you think was the best pitcher that you ever faced?
All of them.
All of them?
Oh, man. Gibson, Marichal, Drysdale, Gaylord Perry, Koufax, Maloney, Tom Seaver, Ferguson, Jenkins. They all in the big, Sutton, they all in the Hall of Fame. But look who was getting me out any time he picked me. Jim O'Toole.
Really?
With Cincinnati. He said, Rico, what's going on? I said, I don't know. And
some
every
guys,
time I see a left-hand pitcher coming in,
yeah.
I said, where the hell is he going? And Hank Aaron and Orlando will laugh. He said, what do you mean? I said, hey, man, what the hell are they bringing in a left-hand pitcher here for? I know I was in trouble then, you know.
Was it change-ups? Was it sinkers? What was it?
I don't know, but I
whatever
was,
they threw?
Yeah, whatever they threw. I
slider,
don't
curve?
It, right down the middle, and I couldn't hit it. I don't know what's wrong.
Good thing there weren't too many of those.
That's exactly right. They won't come from the right-hand side.
Oh,
but,
my goodness.
That's the name of the game. But what I'll say today, that the young players, they need people to talk to them and let them get in the mind that steroid is don't make them a hitter. And the long run, it's going to harm them throughout their life. They have a wife, they have kids, and when you can't do your job, somebody is going to do your job. And that is the truth. And steroid, it messed you up. the doctor says it, and it's the truth. And that's what I want, you know. For instance, I came back a week ago because, no, I came, yeah, a week ago to bury my older son, Rico Jr. He was a ball player. He signed 3 times. I knew he wasn't going to be anything great because he was just done by these flashes, and he always wore new spikes, new gloves. I said, hey, you don't do that. I'm your daddy. Okay, I'll get it for you. But I played with my gloves for 3 years, and every week you want a new spike, every week you want a new gloves, you're not going to be no player. And the people used to say to me, why you say that? I'm telling you all the truth. He is a pretty boy. And that's all it is. And I would like to see the autopsy to see if he was using that. Because the way he died, see, he was playing that day. And I think they strike him out. He went back to the dugout, sit down, and just faint away. He never, and the big thing was it was on my birthday, the 1st of September. That was my present of my birthday, the death of my only son. But coming back to Rico Cardi Foundation, like I told you when you called me from the Dominican Republic to the Dominican Republic, I said, Greg, I need your help. You see, it have few organizations that send me clothes, spikes, gloves. They send me money. But it's the tongue is so poor, and all that is wrong us. They will bring prescription to you, so they'll buy medicine and so forth, and that's what I do. The little that I get, I give it to the people. You go right now to San Pedro de Macorís, and you can send anybody in there and ask about Rico Cardi Foundation. Know what they're going to tell you? What I'm telling you. It's the honest person that get everything and give everything away. And even give what he got. And it's the truth.
That's great.
And that's the God living truth. And I'm asking you all, the Braves that I played here was loved by the fans. And I know if we reach out to the fans, they're going to help Rico Cardi Foundation. And it's make me feel good. Because when I was playing, I take shoes, clothes, you know. Like one time, and this is the truth, I went downtown here to Freeman. And I was going to the bank. I look across and I saw 2 shoes, Cobra and Alligator. And I said, gee, those are beautiful. I walk in with my best friend and I asked the man, I said, hey, you got more of those shoes? He said, I got all color. And I told him, okay, well, just show me. And once he keeps showing me, I say, okay, I like it. I like it. He gave it. And it was almost from that place right there, come around, a man in the middle. And he's taking on shoes and pants. Yeah, I love them. When he got to about 31, I was in the middle. He says, ain't no way I can put no more shoes. What are you doing? He didn't know I was Rico Cardi. Okay? You're going to see what's going to happen now. I said, how much shoes you got? He said, man, it's 31 shoes for you to buy one pair of shoes. You buy like a lady. I said, hey, slow down. I want those shoes. He said, what? I said, I love every one of them that is there. 31 pair of shoes. He didn't know what to do. He says it, like he says afterward, he says, man, this black man coming in and just picking up shoes like a crazy. So I told him, I want every one of them. I took out my checking account. I said, okay, how much it cost? He said, $1,600. Take out my check. $1,600, Rico Cardi. When that man saw my name, he said, wait a minute. you are my ball player and my family's ball player. And he called up all his family. His daddy came over and said, hey, give him all of those shoes that is there. And he give you a check, you can tear it up. His father took the check, tear it up. And I said to the fellow there who was running, I said, hey, I can't do that. No, I got to pay you something. He says, how about 100? I said, no, it's too much shoes for $100. So my friend that is walking with me, my best friend, he says, Rico, give them $300. They want to give you the shoes. I say, okay, I'll give them $600. I wrote out the check for $600, and he didn't want that $600. So here I am. I'm living at Payton Place. I said, you going to take my shoes over there? It's a black section. He said, I'll take it any way you tell me. At about 5 o'clock, he said, Rico, are you at home? I said, no, my family is home. You can take it there. And he took the 31 pair of shoes there. But then people went berserk. I think it's 120 of his family came in maybe a second. I don't know where they live. But they was there. And they was saying, man, give me an autograph. Rico, yours, my player. You know, it make me feel good.
Yeah,
you know?
That's great.
That's awesome.
Well, we appreciate you being here today. We're about out of time, and those are great stories. We don't get to hear enough of those, but we certainly we'll get information about your foundation, and if there's some of our fans that want to help contribute, if we can do something with the organization, I'll definitely pass it along. We'd love to help, and it sounds like you're doing great things.
I know. That's why I reach out to you all, because I know the American people, they love to help. The Red Cross is there and so forth. And I know you are going to help Rico Cardi Foundation. But before you all do that, you all can send them behind my back and ask in San Pedro about Rico Cardi Foundation. And they will tell you. You wouldn't hear one word bad against Rico Cardi Foundation. All you're going to hear is good things.
We're going to get you to lunch. And, again, appreciate it, Ricky. Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, absolutely. I could sit here and listen to you tell stories all day. And I do know one thing that I'm sure of after fans hear this. I know that they're going to check out the Rico Cardi Foundation and help
Thank
out
you.
Any
yeah.
way
Thank
they can.
Thank you very so, much. Right. And I know that's why I asked Greg. I said, Greg, will you present me to the fans? It being so long. Mm. But all these fans that is out there, these young.
Yeah, we got a whole new group of fans. Mm-hmm.
But the father, the uncles, the aunts, they all knows who was Rico Cardi. And ball players too, because most of the ball players love me. You see, it's only a couple. Like for instance, you know, through 64 through 70, the ball players and the manager used to pick for the All-Star. And that's why they never picked me. And
is that the right
that
end?
Year of 1970, the fans, them, they give it to the fans. The fans are writing, and from then on, the fans start writing on.
Yeah.
Right,
mm-hmm.
And you know who was the three outfielders that year? Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, and Rico Cardi over Roberto Clemente. Listen careful, Roberto Clemente was the fourth outfielder. Now you know how great I was, and that I was telling you how in the world. In that wall, you can put up Rafa Ramirez, with the big guns them should be. I should be close to Hank Aaron.
Well, I told you, we just spread them out. And
not Ramirez.
No we have a bunch of different alumni.
You know who is Ramirez? Yeah. You take the big guns and put the big guns them together.
No, we got to spread it out. We don't want anybody to sit in one spot. Yeah, we spread it out. All right, Rico, we appreciate you, buddy.
Mike.
All right, man.
So it was Rico. Nice talking to you.
You too,
nice
buddy.
Meeting you.
Yeah, great to meet you, too.
And Rick and Greg, thank you all very much for this moment.
Thank you so much, Rico.
And it's, you know, it's sad. It's very sad to know that my son is gone. But that's part of life. Mm-hmm. And I have to accept it. We're down deep, you know. you cannot forget it. But I ask God that I'm not mad with him. It's happened. I have to accept it. And I hope that every person that is out there that is listening to me will take that same attitude. We cannot be offended but by God's works. And thank you all very much. And the fans, thank them for accepting me and loving me as a ball player and a human being. God bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks again to Braves legend Rico Cardi for joining us here. I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as we did. I'm betting that you did. Greg, so as we're sitting here and taping this, big news in Braves country yesterday with Ronald Acuna Jr. winning the National League Rookie of the Year Award, as he deserved to, in my humble opinion. And then as we're sitting here, I wish we could fast forward in time a little bit here. By the time this comes out tomorrow, we'll know. But we both think that Snit should be the winner of the Manager of the Year. And I don't mean that as any disrespect to Craig Counsell with the Brewers. If he won, I would understand because they had a great year. But I still think that Snit and everything that he did was the most deserving candidate or the most deserving winner of that award. But Acuna, talk about Acuna. I mean, there wasn't any doubt in my mind. Juan Soto had a great year. Walker Buehler, great year. But to me, what Acuna did, he was the clear choice for that award.
Sure, and we're biased, and we should be.
Absolutely.
And I have no problem saying that, right? We're all about the Braves. What I saw Acuna do, leading the team, set the record for or he led the team in home runs. You know, he's obviously set a record for rookie home runs and the way he stepped in and batted leadoff and had the big grand slam. I was listening a little bit on MLB.com this morning as I was driving in and on satellite, and they were talking about the popular, you know, Acuna became the popular vote because of what he did. He did a lot of things in kind of grand style, grand fashion. He hit the grand slam during the playoffs. He had eight games in a row where he hit a home run.
Well, he was going for that.
He was going for that record. Yeah. Then he gets hit, you know, and that whole ordeal between us and the Marlins. So I think that became – they got some national spotlight, and so that helped kind of tip him up. But he won, and I mean, it was almost a landslide.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really even close. I think it's the right decision. I don't think anybody can argue him doing that. And we hope the same for Snit. We believe that Snit deserves it. We love what he did. He brought this team from a sub-500 team to all of a sudden they win the division. And so in my mind, he's going to win it, but, you know, you never know.
Yeah, I think there's so many, as is the case with any winning team or successful team, you can look at, there's so many people played a part in it, but if you have to pick out a couple for individual awards for what they did, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a better pair than Acuna and Snit in this case with this particular team. I mean, the second half, Acuna moves to leadoff, and again, there are a whole lot of contributors here, so I don't want to say he put them on his back or whatever, but I'm telling you, him moving that leadoff spot with more than anything
sure.
was probably the biggest move that was made, and that move was made by Snit, who
that's right,
you know.
Well, and then also the way he finished the season, his second half was outstanding.
Was,
I mean, he got better as the season went on. Of course, he came in and, you know, took him a couple weeks to get adjusted, and then he does get hurt, and then coming back, a lot of times you see guys in a season that maybe they get into a groove and then they get hurt, and then that groove goes away because it changes your mind, changes your mindset. It changes the rhythm that you're in. All of a sudden you may be dealing with an injury the rest of the year, even though you're come back and you're off the DL. Now you come back, you kind of, your rhythm's off, your routine's off. Now you're dealing with rehabbing to some degree or getting treatment every day. So it just changes things for him to get back, and then all of a sudden he got better and better and better. So the way he continued to do that throughout the season, in my mind, that was pretty special.
How often is it, because we, especially diehard baseball folks, you know, we're all always following the prospects and, you know, the next big thing, and these prospects get hyped up so much, and they always have, but especially nowadays.
Sure.
I mean, it's really, really, the attention on the prospects is probably greater now than I think it ever has been before, just at least in my opinion. So it never happens hardly that a prospect can live up to that hype. And that's mm-hmm. not because of their performance. It's just because we overhype them so much that it's just, it's impossible for people to live up to that.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue Acuña not only lived up to it, I think he surpassed the hype. And the hype was there. I mean, he was number one or number two in most publications coming into the season as far as prospect rankings. I don't think any of us could have seen what he did, particularly in the second half, coming. As good as we thought, or maybe even knew he was going to be, I just remember being in disbelief almost at times. Like when he was in that home run streak, and the leadoff one in particular, whichever game it was, you know, he comes up to the plate, and my colleague that sits to the left of me in the press box, which he and I kind of were chit-chatting through most every game anyways, and you know, having good conversation, Acuña's strolling up to the plate, and I just kind of leaned over and said, "You think he's going to do it again?" He's like, "I don't know, leadoff again? I don't know." First pitch, boom. And as the ball's in the air going out, I kind of just playfully like smacked him in the arm. I was like, "He just did it. He just did it again." I was like, and we're just looking at each other going, "This is unbelievable. He can't be doing this. This is unreal." And that's just how I felt watching him, particularly in the second half. It was just, again, he not only lived up to the hype, he surpassed it. And I think that's a big part of the reason why he won yesterday, and why he was the deserving winner. So,
well, I think that's a good point. And the last person I remember living up to the hype was Bryce Harper. I mean, think about all the hype that was around him. The person that didn't live up to the hype was also a Washington National, and that was Steven Strasburg. I think that he was kind of a victim of, there's no way he can live up to becoming the next Nolan Ryan or the next Sandy Koufax. And remember, he was throwing 100 miles an hour. He comes up, and he was highly touted. But and not that he's done poorly. He's just been a little inconsistent. He's had some injuries. But if you look at Bryce Harper, I think he's the one that came into the league with a lot of hype, and he's delivered.
Yeah, I think. And to be fair, by the way, on the other side for the American League winner, Ohtani, the hype surrounding him was pretty
big,
and I would say that he did something nobody's done since Babe Ruth.
Yeah, he lived up to two hypes. I mean, his pitching hype and his hitting hype, and he definitely won. He made me a believer on that. I was really a little skeptical on, like, okay, there's no way he can be that good in both of these things.
I was very skeptical. I'll be honest with you. I was like, there's no way. I was like, this experiment's going to last for a little bit, but
they're going to move him.
One or the other. It's going to happen relatively
quickly.
Yeah,
it'll force him into being either a pitcher or a hitter.
Yeah, but he did it. He made it work. And yeah. I don't know the injury stuff with him. I haven't followed it that closely, but I regardless, I think he's going to be around a long time.
And just the fact that he did it 1 year. Now, long term, your body can only withstand so many pitches and so many swings, and to do them both together maybe shorten his career. But it's just interesting that he even did it for 1 year.
I'll be honest. Like I said, I was very skeptical. I love it when players like that. Like, I love being proven wrong about that mm-hmm. stuff. I love seeing a guy come in and do something like that I haven't seen before. I mean, these two Rookie of the Year winners were outstanding in every sense of the word. So
and we've had some great Rookies of the Year over the years. Yeah. You think about Bob Horner and Rafael Furcal and Craig Kimbrell.
Right.
So we've got a good history of that, and I'm excited to add Ronald Acuña to that list. And as he's going to be one of our alumni here, that hopefully we'll see him at the ballpark after a long, stellar career.
I think we will. I hope we will. And hopefully we're going to add Snit's name to the awards list also. But, well, hey, we're not going to be here next week because it's Thanksgiving week. And, you know, we're going to be with our families. And I'm sure all of you out there, hopefully you're going to enjoy some time with your family or friends or whatever you want to do during the Thanksgiving holiday. After the holiday, We're working on. We're pretty sure we know who our next guest is going to be after the break, and we're not going to tell you who it is. But we're both really excited about that. And then right after that, it's winter meetings time in Vegas, and we're going to be there. And I know we already have at least one guest lined up for that. That, again, I'm not going to tell you who it is, but we are extremely excited about that and the possibilities of other guests at the winter meetings. So I'm excited, man. We got Thanksgiving, and then we're going to have some exciting shows after the break.
Yeah, Las Vegas in the wintertime. I think the weather's going to be in the 60s, so it'll be a little bit better than what's going on here. But have you been to Vegas before?
I have not.
Oh, this wow. Okay. I played minor league ball there.
Did you?
Yeah. Best thing about Vegas at the time was that I could eat a steak, eggs, and a milkshake for $1.99 after midnight. So after the game, I wouldn't eat, and I'd wait till 12:01. I'd go into the casino, and I would just pig out.
Please tell me they still have that deal.
No, they don't have that deal anymore. Not that I'm aware of, but we can try to find it.
I'm gonna trust me. I mean, I don't want to make any bold predictions here, but I have a feeling I will be in search of a meal after midnight at some point while I'm out there. So I'm going to
– hopefully we'll be broke. We'll be broke while you're doing it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I need that $1.99 special. It may not exist, but I'm going to try it. I'm going to look for it.
The gambler special.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for checking us out here on Behind the Braves. If you haven't already done so, please rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Again, your feedback is not only appreciated, but it is noticed. We see everything. We see all the comments, the tweets, the Facebook comments, Instagram story. Make it part of your Instagram story. Let people know you're listening. However you want to help, we very much appreciate it. And just spread the word. Tell a friend or two, if you'd like, about Behind the Braves. All right, everybody, have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.